Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would now like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Stephanie, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Understanding the Affordable Care Act in 2013, What's New? And this is part of a series of programs we've been doing on the Affordable Care Act to help all of you better understand the Affordable Care Act. This program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and because of that collaboration and your interest in this topic, we actually have really doubled the number of participants on the call today. We have over 1,709 people on the call. This is a very large call, and you come from all over the United States, from all different parts of this country, and we also have international participants from Canada, India, the Netherlands, Venezuela, and the United Kingdom, so you really come from all over the world. And are interested in understanding the Affordable Care Act. Today's program was made possible by Celgene Genentech, a member of the Roche Group, Novartis Oncology, and a contribution from Lilly USA LLC, and I really want to thank them for supporting this really important program today. This is very important for all of you to have this information. Now, you have received some information from Cancer Care about all of our different collaborating organizations as resources for all of you, and a bit of information about our speakers and the topics they'll be covering. And there also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you all to complete that evaluation form at the end of the program today. Your feedback is very important to us. You have wonderful suggestions for topics for us to do in the future, and also you have wonderful thoughts about the program today, so we would really like to have your feedback about that. Indeed, this whole series of programs that we've been doing has really been a tribute to the feedback we've received from you on the evaluation forms in which you've been asking us to do this programming, this type of programming. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Michael Morrow. And Dr. Morrow is leader of Myeloproliferative Diseases Program, member of Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, professor, Weill Cornell Medical College, New York Presbyterian Hospital. And Dr. Morrow is going to address an overview of cancer treatments, and also costs of cancer, direct medical costs, related non-medical costs, and daily living expenses. It's my pleasure now to present Dr. Morrow to all of you.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thanks to all of you for joining. So by way of overview, as a prelude to talking about the Affordable Care Act, as an oncologist or as a hematologist-oncologist, we should talk and understand about how we perceive cancer therapy and its treatment and diagnosis. Now, clearly, cancer therapy has made great advances and great strides. Cancer therapy historically tended to be an inpatient hospital-based paradigm of chemotherapy or radiation-based treatments with very little options, unfortunately, in the distant past. But clearly, over time, we've made advances to the point where cancer now is often a very treatable disease, can be a chronic condition, or one that can be managed for a long period of time, even during one's natural, normal lifespan. The principles of cancer treatment include things that are well-known and well-described. In order to make the diagnosis of cancer, we have a variety of tools which have fixed costs and are necessary to really confirm and to guide treatment and to properly decide between physician and patient about a treatment course. Now, diagnostics have made great advances as well, and the cost of diagnostics and the availability of diagnostics continues to evolve. One example might be with extremely detailed knowledge of the human genome or the genetics, our understanding of what underlies many cancers is greatly expanded, and it impacts directly on how we choose treatment. Many cancers are specifically treated based on specific findings in diagnostic tests, and indeed, drug choices can be made based on specific findings and be related to very small populations of patients. Treatment itself still includes conventional hospital-based chemotherapy, radiation therapy, surgical therapy with very well-described and fixed costs. That being said, treatment itself has been a moving target, and there's been great strides and advances on changing the face of cancer therapy into more of patient-friendly and more easily delivered therapy. That is, treatments that may be oral as opposed to intravenous or hospital-based, treatments that have lower side effect profiles, and, of course, treatments that are more effective and are more beneficial to patients. Once cancer has been treated and we move into a remission or a response stance, we have to think about the long-term follow-up of cancer survivors. And often cancer itself or the cancer therapy impacts and leads to additional care that's required, sometimes for a period of time, sometimes lifelong. One example would be a patient who's had types of radiation may have greater risks of second cancers or other diseases, such as heart disease. Patients with one type of cancer who receive chemotherapy might have, unfortunately, a risk of another cancer. So our follow-up management is becoming more complex as we have better treatments for the primary cancers that we deal with. The advances, again, have been tremendous and, again, can't be underestimated, but they do come with greater additional considerations. One example there would be that outpatient or more lower side effect type chemotherapy programs often require more attention to someone at home or more attention to someone out of the hospital, and we really rely on the patient's family and their caregivers to assist in the care of someone with cancer or with fighting cancer. And that's just one example of a hidden or an unknown or often under-recognized cost. There's also impacts to the cancer patient who's being treated, their impact on their work, their productivity, their role in a family as a caregiver themselves, perhaps, as a provider. There's indirect and really perhaps measurable effects on caregivers themselves, people who are related to or their loved ones who are fighting cancer need to often interrupt and change their life pattern in order to help with care, and that's an indirect financial impact, which, is increasingly important as we try to keep people out of the hospital and on therapies more based at home or more based in an oral versus an intravenous chemotherapy approach. One example in my own field, which is leukemia, is that therapy that had never been imagined and been able to be given out of the hospital, which would be the primary treatment for acute leukemia, we can now affect out of the hospital. But it requires all the same trappings, the same blood work and supportive care and medications and increasing support from family and loved ones in order to make it possible. But it's been more beneficial for the patient and probably for the overall, for society and for overall costs. So, and then lastly, survivorship cannot be underestimated, especially with greater and higher remission rates for young patients with cancer, that where effects can be lifelong. The impact on one's quality of life can be long-lasting, and we need to understand that better. So cancer care is a complicated equation with many different variables on both sides, and it's really we have a good problem at hand, that we're much better at treating cancer and managing side effects and moving towards a more patient-friendly way of treating cancer, which leads us to a real strong desire to understand how will the Affordable Care Act impact on our ability to continue to make the advances that we have made.
Thank you very much, Dr. Moore. Excellent overview of just cancer and its treatments, and setting the context for our understanding more about the Affordable Care Act. And our first speaker, who's going to really talk about the Affordable Care Act, is Alice Yeager. And Ms. Yeager is Director of Community Outreach, New York State of Health, the official health plan marketplace, New York State Department of Health. And Ms. Yeager is going to address an overview of the Affordable Care Act, its key provisions and major benefits, health plan exchanges, and marketplaces. It's really my pleasure to bring on Alice Yeager.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thank you to Cancer Care for providing this opportunity. So the Affordable Care Act was signed into law on March 23rd, 2010, and basically it's a set of health insurance reforms that really look to fill in the gaps in the availability of affordable health coverage in our country. So I want to first talk about some of the key provisions in the Affordable Care Act that bear upon some new regulations in health plans. Insurers cannot deny health insurance on the basis of a pre-existing condition, a clearly important reform for everyone, but particularly for all of us who have been affected by cancer. Insurers can't charge higher premiums based on health status or gender. and they're prohibited from imposing lifetime and annual dollar limits on coverage, and prohibited from rescinding coverage except in cases of fraud. Starting in 2014, all health plans must offer benefits that meet a minimum set of standards called essential health benefits, and I'll talk more specifically about that. Young adults can remain on their parents' policies to age 26. New health plans will be required to cover certain preventive services with no cost sharing, and that clearly impacts on women and being able to get mammograms, screening mammograms with no copays. Insurers will be required to spend at least 80% of premiums on medical costs or pay rebates back to consumers. And the Medicare Part D donut hole, which is focused on prescription drugs, is being phased out. So a couple of other points that I want to make before I talk about the marketplace. Medicaid, in the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid was expanded to 138% of the federal poverty level, and very importantly, would include adults without dependent children. The Supreme Court, in determining that the Affordable Care Act was constitutional, also determined that states are not mandated to expand Medicaid to 138% of the federal poverty level. Additionally, most individuals must have health insurance in 2014 or at the end of the year may be subject to penalty, although there are exceptions. Annual limits on out-of-pocket costs for individuals and families in 2014. So that's about $6,350 for individuals and $12,700 for a family plan. No more than that for annual limits on out-of-pocket costs. And finally, although this doesn't include all the elements of the Affordable Care Act, the creation of health insurance marketplaces in every state where individuals and small businesses can shop, compare, and enroll in health insurance. And the definition of small businesses for 2014 will be for those that have 50 or fewer employees. So let me talk a little bit about the health insurance marketplaces, which opened on October 1st. So 14 states have established their own state-run marketplaces, and 36 states have established marketplaces, but they've been established by the federal government either in partnership with the states or by the federal government itself. If you go to www.healthcare.gov, there's a list of the states that have established their own marketplaces and the contact information for those states. And there's also a list of those states that have expanded Medicaid and those who have not. So go to that website and you'll be able to get all of that information. So what essentially is a marketplace? Well, it's an online place to shop for a health plan that's right for you. You can go to the marketplace, you can shop, you can compare apples to apples, and then you can enroll in a plan that's right for you, that meets your particular medical needs, that has a network of providers that works for you, and that meets your pocketbook. There are both individuals and small businesses will be in those marketplaces. And it's important to know that only if you enroll in a health plan through one of these marketplaces will you potentially be eligible for financial assistance. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as well. So open enrollment began on October 1st. Individuals can enroll in health plans during a six-month open enrollment period, or after that if there's some kind of qualifying event like marriage or divorce, or a child is born or you've lost your insurance. Those who qualify for Public insurance like Medicaid or CHIP can enroll any time of the month, and small employers can also choose open enrollment dates for their employees whenever they like. But the earliest date for insurance to be effective is January 1st, 2014. One of the things that the Affordable Care Act determined was that for many people in small businesses, support is really needed in order to help people to enroll and to shop and compare and see what's right for them. And so there are three different ways that support is being provided. One is online support through healthcare.gov. If it's a marketplace that was established by the federal government. And if not, you go to that site and you can find what the website is for your state that's established its own website, its own marketplace. Or you can go by telephone. You can call a call center and not only enroll through the call center, and all those call center people have been trained, but you could also ask questions and express concerns that you have about how about your own health plan enrollment. You can go to this is toll free, 1-800-318-2596. And that's the call center number for the federal marketplaces. Again, if you went on the federal marketplace site, healthcare.gov, you could see whether your state has its own marketplace and therefore its own contact information call center number. And the third is that all states, all marketplaces will have in-person assisters in your community. They might be navigators who are people from organizations that are embedded in the communities to provide one-on-one help to figure out what's best for you. They can work with either brokers or they can work with either small businesses or with individuals. There are brokers who can do the same kind of thing, and they can work also either with individuals or with small businesses, but they must get certified. And then a third category called certified application counselors. The point of all of this is that you will get support. As I said before, all health plans in 2014, with very few exceptions, are required to have 10 essential health benefits. Health plans can have more benefits than that, obviously charging higher premiums, but they must have these benefits. The benefits are listed on healthcare.gov, but briefly, let me highlight what they are, and they're ambulatory patient services and emergency room services, hospitalization, maternity and newborn care, mental health and substance abuse disorders, prescription drugs, rehabilitation and habilitation, lab services, preventive and wellness programs, and pediatric services, including oral and vision. Financial assistance will be available to a very high percentage of individuals who enroll in the marketplaces. And that financial assistance will come in the form of either tax credits and or cost-sharing reductions. And the important thing about these tax credits and cost-sharing reductions is that they can be taken immediately at the time of application and will reduce, in terms of the tax credits, the cost of your premiums, and in terms of the cost sharing, they'll reduce the costs of your out-of-pocket, of your deductibles and your co-pays. And there is a tool on healthcare.gov that you can use to kind of get an estimate of what kind of financial assistance may be available to you based on your income, the size of your family, and where you live. Just very briefly on the small business marketplace, the value is really tremendous for small employers, and basically the value is twofold. One is that an employer can give tremendous choice to its employees because now for the first time they can more easily offer any number of plans to their employees because they will only get one bill and only have to pay one bill. So they get one bill from the marketplace and they pay one bill. So right now offering more than one plan would often be an administrative nightmare. And so that's a major, major plus. Finally, just an overview of a summary of seven things I think you really need to know. New affordable and comprehensive health insurance options will be available, are available. Open enrollment began on October 1st and will end on March 31st, 2014, and at the earliest, coverage will begin January 1st. You will not be denied health insurance on the basis of a pre-existing condition. All health insurance options will offer a comprehensive array of services, including preventive services, at no cost to you. You can get help enrolling in coverage through calling a call center, an in-person assist, or going online and having a web chat capacity. And really critically, you can pick the plan that's best for you by comparing your plan choices based on price, provider, network. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Yeager, for a wonderful presentation and lots of information for everybody to absorb. And I know there'll be questions during the Q&A, and thank you so much. And our next speaker is Deborah Wolf. And Ms. Wolf is a senior attorney, Legal Health, New York Legal Assistance Group, NILAC. And she is going to present on Medicare, the Medicaid expansion, and the appeals process. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. Wolf.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. So I'll be reviewing the major changes in Medicare and Medicaid as a result of the Act, and then have a discussion of the appeals process for denied claims under the law. Medicare and Medicaid are both government-sponsored health insurance, and I'll begin with Medicare, which is a federal program with rules that are uniform to all participants in all 50 states. Medicare is available to most people age 65 or older who are citizens or permanent residents, and if under age 65, a person who's been receiving Social Security disability benefits for a period of 24 months. Medicare is generally not available to others, although there are some very limited exceptions. Medicare coverage consists of a number of parts. Part A, which provides free hospital coverage. Part B, the medical insurance, which requires a monthly premium. And Part D, the prescription drug insurance plans, which are provided through private insurance companies that have contracts with the government. There's also Part C, which allows private health insurance companies such as HMOs and PPOs to provide Medicare benefits, and these are called Medicare Advantage plans. So here are the most important things to know about the Affordable Care Act if you have Medicare. Similar to private insurance, you will get more preventive services for less. Medicare will now cover a range of no-cost screenings for cancer, diabetes, and other chronic diseases, including mammograms or colonoscopies, without any coinsurance or deductible. You'll also get a free yearly wellness visit. Part D coverage, which is the prescription drug coverage, is known for its donut hole, during which you pay 100% of drug costs. For someone with multiple or expensive medication, this can be very costly. As Alice mentioned, the donut hole will be decreased incrementally by 50% in 2014 and will be closed completely by 2020. During this process, some measures have taken place to ease the burden. With the Affordable Care Act, if you're in the donut hole, you'll receive discounts on both brand name and generic drugs, and these discounts will increase annually. The discount is applied automatically at the counter of your pharmacy. You don't have to do anything to receive it. The Act in 2013 also provided a one-time tax-free $250 rebate from Medicare to help pay for your prescriptions. There also will be more outreach efforts to ensure that people who are eligible for Part D subsidies are aware of these programs that are available. With the Affordable Care Act, your doctor now gets more support. With new initiatives to support care coordination, your doctor may get additional resources to make sure that your treatments are consistent. They're able to form accountable care organizations comprised of doctors and community health organizations who agree to be accountable for the quality, cost, and overall care of Medicare beneficiaries who are enrolled in the fee-for-service program. Your Medicare coverage is protected. Under the Act, your existing Medicare-covered benefits won't be reduced or taken away, and the life of the Medicare Trust Fund has been extended to at least 2029, a 12-year extension. I'm now going to move to Medicaid. And Medicaid is a federal-state partnership with shared authority and financing. Eligibility rules are established mainly by each state and vary depending on where you live. So it's important to know your state Medicaid requirements and regulations. Access to Medicaid is based on being low income with a limit on how much you can have in income, assets, and resources. For those who are disabled or elderly with higher income, one can often become eligible through special Medicaid programs or the use of trusts. The Affordable Care Act provides for a number of Medicaid reforms. The Act fills in prior gaps so that, as Alice mentioned, Medicaid will cover most Americans under age 65, making less than 133% of the poverty limit through the Medicaid expansion. This expands coverage to more lower-income people, including groups such as childless couples that have not always had access to coverage. The Act also simplifies the application process for Medicaid in that eligibility and enrollment will be much simpler and will be coordinated with the Affordable Act marketplace, as discussed by Alice. One application will determine eligibility for Medicaid or for one of the plans through the marketplace and whether or not somebody's entitled to a subsidy. The Affordable Care Act requires that Medicaid provide all newly eligible adults with a benchmark benefit package that meets the minimum essential health benefits that will be available in the new health insurance exchange, as also discussed by Alice a bit earlier. The goal is to enhance the quality of care for all Americans, regardless of whether they have private insurance, Medicare, or Medicaid. Now, some people are eligible for both Medicaid and Medicare and are referred to as dual eligibles. The Affordable Care Act creates a new office, the Medicare-Medicaid Coordination Office, which is charged with making the two programs work together more efficiently and will be focused on improving quality and access to care for Medicare and Medicaid enrollees. One of the goals of the Act is to hold insurance companies accountable, and there will be similar appeal rights for Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurance, as I will now discuss. The Act contains many legal protections with the goals of putting the consumer back in charge of their health coverage and removing insurance company barriers between patients and their doctors. The Act guarantees your right to appeal any adverse decision by your insurance company and expands your right to ask that your plan reconsider any denial of payment. An adverse decision can be a denial of payment for reasons such as medical necessity or not a covered service. There's always been some method to appeal a health care decision, but these rights are expanded. To start, with the Affordable Care Act, health plan and insurance companies have to tell you why they've decided to deny a claim with very specific information. You are also now entitled to a copy, free of charge, of any new or additional evidence considered or relied upon in connection with your claim denial in order to fully understand the denial and prepare your appeal to the insurer. If a matter can't be resolved by speaking with your insurance company, you have the right to file an appeal directly to your insurance company. This is when you ask your insurance company to determine if its first decision to deny coverage was a correct one. The problem is that there's often a conflict of interest and that the company paying for the coverage is also making the decision. Even so, a good percentage of appeals are approved. Under the Affordable Care Act, your insurance company must conduct a full and fair review of its decision. If the case is urgent, your insurance company must speed up this process. If your insurance company denies your appeal, you will then have the right to request what's called an external review. Your insurance company is also required to give you notice about your right to file the external review and what the process is. An external review basically gives you the right to file the second appeal to an outside, objective, and independent panel, no matter where you live and what type of health insurance you have. This means that independent medical professionals with no financial stake in the claim make the decision. the insurance company no longer gets the final say over many benefit decisions. It also means doctors and patients have more control over health care. External reviews can also be expedited if it's an urgent matter. If the external reviewer overturns your insurer's denial, your insurer must give you the payments or services you requested in your claim. When you request an internal appeal, your plan must always give you its decision within certain time limits as well. The Act requires that states designate an independent office of health insurance consumer assistance that will respond to inquiries and complaints by consumers, and this consumer assistance program will also be available to help file complaints and give information about how to file appeals. Understanding your rights and responsibilities under this and other applicable laws is important. It's important to read your healthcare policy so that you understand your coverage, what is required of you, how to appeal, and any deadlines imposed. Even with the Affordable Care Act, appeal deadlines are strict, so make sure to read your explanation of benefits from the insurance company and respond on time. I know it's often difficult to keep on top of insurance matters with so much going on, but these new protections, as well as the Consumer Assistance Program, will expand your rights and help you navigate any insurance issues or questions that come up. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Deborah. This is a wonderful presentation and very informative, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, but it really helps people to understand a lot of the details. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos. Dr. Palos is the Clinical Research Manager, Division of Medical Affairs, Department of Cancer Survivorship, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Palos is going to address the importance of talking with your healthcare team about the Affordable Care Act, and it's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Palos.
Thank you, Carolyn. I listened carefully to all the information that our previous three speakers gave, and a couple of things came to mind. One was that the mantra of the Affordable Care Act seems to be to have better care, better outcomes, and lower costs. And as we heard, the key features are to improve quality and lower health care costs, to give access to health care, and provide new consumer protection. We did hear that. Yet anyone who has access to any type of social media channels, print materials, newspapers, journals, social networks, the neighbor next door, the friend that you jog with, knows that ever since open enrollment rolled out, there's been lots of different challenges, obstacles, and debates. So that shows us that the interaction of all of these challenges is going to be augmented or enhanced because of the complexity, the dynamic nature, and again, very clearly it shows us that there are still many unknown details about the ACA. So, but don't let that daunt you. I came across a very interesting statement on the ACA. It was, and this is a quote, "The Affordable Care Act is not only shaking up the healthcare landscape in America, but also the way healthcare providers communicate with their customers." And in response to this shakeup, the federal government, professional health organizations, insurance exchanges, and patient advocacy groups are developing integrated communication strategies to help reach people and patients on a personal level. And that's the end of that quote. So that tells us then everyone is looking at communication. It is important. However, trying to achieve provider-patient communication about the ACA is going to be quite challenging. Nonetheless, it's the responsibility of each one of us as an individual to be educated about the ACA, and it's particularly applicable to those of us who are diagnosed with cancer, who are surviving or survivors of cancer, and to the caregivers. So in the next few moments, I'm going to provide three basic steps that may help you navigate this process. One is continue to increase your personal knowledge about the ACA and how it will affect you. We heard about how important it is to know what each plan covers in terms of physicians or hospital visits, vaccinations, screening, and counseling. Specifically, though, these are some areas that you want to really become informed about and ask questions about. One is coverage. Again, particularly important to cancer patients and survivors because of the pre-existing clause that often kept patients from getting insurance. However, other groups are going to benefit from the ACA, and that would include our young adults, women, seniors, and, again, other groups. The second area would be cost. The goal of the ACA is to give Americans access, affordable to affordable health care. So ask questions about the cost of treatments, medications. You can even do some comparison shopping. See what is affordable for you. Remember again, it's going to be interesting also because some of those costs, especially related to premiums, are now going to have to be publicly justified by the insurance companies if they choose to do so. So we're going to be more transparent about costs, and that's really going to be good. So we want to be very well informed about that. The third area that you want to ask about is care. Ask specifically what type of care an insurance plan is going to provide, especially when you go shopping through the different exchanges. And it's even more specific given a chronic illness. I think, you know, for example, you'll want to know, do they, have the insurance barriers to emergency services been eliminated? Are you going to have to face those any longer? You know, so you want to be real specific about some of those questions. The second thing you want to do is develop strong communication networks with your healthcare team and also experts outside your team. You can attend those town hall meetings that they're having, the navigation fairs that are being held across the country. You can go online to the hhs.gov and read their fact sheets. They have quite a number of very interesting fact sheets that are specific to certain types of population. And again, continue accessing information through programs such as the one you're currently listening to. The third thing you want to do is identify community resources that can help you. So those could be also local support groups, senior centers, neighborhood daycare associations, different groups like that that are normally in the community and will have information. And again, if they don't have the information, they can point you in the right direction to find out where you can. One other tip is to become familiar with the timeline and go over it with your healthcare team. For instance, we already know enrollment opened in October. In January 2014, coverage is supposed to begin, and in March 2014, enrollment is supposed to close. So there's quite a debate going on about the possibility of extending these deadlines. So it's going to be crucial that you continue to follow the latest news and the changes that are going on. In closing, remember, there is no recipe. There is no one-shoe-fits-all formula. The goal is, and when you're communicating with your healthcare team and these experts, is not for you not to become the expert in the ACA. The goal is to educate yourself as needed to be well-informed and be able to ask the right questions. You also want to know who's the best person to ask and where is the best place to go to get timely, trustworthy answers and information to your questions. In short, you want to be patient, you want to be informed, and you want to be enrolled, because in the long run, we hope that everyone can benefit from the ACA. Thank you, Carolyn.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Palos. That was really wonderful. And again, I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. I think you really, address a lot of concerns and issues that people have, and it's very helpful to hear your comments. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Jane Levy, and Ms. Levy is Director of Patient Assistance Programs at Cancer Care. She's an oncology social worker, and she's going to address what are patient assistance programs, how they help, linking you to needed cancer organizations, resources, and information, and also review the free psychosocial support services offered by Cancer Care. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to my colleague, Jane Levy.
Thank you, Carolyn. Welcome all. My name is Jane Levy. I'm the Director of Patient Assistance Programs at Cancer Care, and I know this is a topic of interest for all of you. Cancer is an expensive illness, and financial concerns are pervasive, as well as a significant source of stress. However, and I'm going to underscore what Guadalupe said, Dr. Palos, having an open conversation about the cost of cancer can help you become better informed about your options, and you may be able to reduce the financial impact of your illness. When patients and families talk about the cost of cancer, they really fall into about three areas of financial concern. First of all, there are those direct medical expenses, hospital, doctor's bills, cancer drugs, medical copays, coinsurance. There are those related medical expenses, things often not covered by insurance, such as transportation, home care, child care, medical supplies, over-the-counter medications, lodging, and food supplements. And then there are those costs of daily living, rent, mortgage, food, utilities, taxes, and things that often become a strain when cancer is on the picture. And I'll address all of these areas. When it comes to managing the medical expenses, it pays to be informed and upfront. Number one, understand your insurance policy. no matter what policy that is, so you are not blindsided by charges. And ask your insurance company to assign you a case manager if anything is confusing to you. Keep a diary of all your expenses so you can catch billing errors and keep things organized. And number three, talk to your healthcare team as soon as possible about your financial situation. In 2009, the Society for Clinical Oncology actually published a pamphlet entitled The Cost of Cancer, and it really made speaking to your oncologist and your healthcare team about financial concerns no longer a taboo subject. Physicians, healthcare providers are a lot more sensitive to costs, and they can connect you to people who know about resources, such as hospital social workers, financial coordinators, discharge planners, and resource specialists. And these people can in turn direct you to organizations and entitlement programs that can help. They could be copay assistance, pharmaceutical support, applications for transportation, social security disability, etc. And it's important not to delay when applying for benefits, as they often take time to process. And if medical bills threaten to overwhelm you, the experts recommend that you speak up immediately, as many settings may offer payment plans, they may cut the charges, or they may have special funding. And by all means, do not ignore bills, for once they go into collections, they are harder to resolve. Now, this sounds like a tall order when you are sick, but there are many organizations that can help provide support, education, and direct you to resources. Organizations such as Cancer Care, staffed by professional oncology social workers, the American Cancer Society, Leukemia and Lymphoma, and many organizations that maintain state-by-state resource databases that are searchable by zip code to give you to point you to the correct organizations that can help. The Patient Advocate Foundation provides case management and advocacy to help negotiate financial and insurance matters, and patients can also look to medical billing specialists. There are programs out there to assist many patients with the cost of their cancer medications, as well as their other medications not related to cancer. Many of these are sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry. They include free drug programs to assist patients who have no insurance, copay card programs for specific medications, drug companies, drug copayment assistance programs for privately insured patients, and disease-specific copayment assistance foundations that are administered by nonprofit organizations and are often disease-specific. Another resource I'd like to point people to is many of the drug companies that provide cancer medications also have reimbursement specialists, so they can work with you if you're having trouble with your insurance companies. Aside from getting help from medical expenses, when it comes to living expenses, first of all, let all your creditors know about your financial situation. You may be surprised by positive responses from phone, utility companies, etc., willing to work with you before a crisis develops and helping you develop a payment plan. There are also many voluntary and government agencies, both local and county, that offer emergency assistance, eviction protection programs, rent assistance, food programs, property tax relief, and energy assistance. How do you find these programs? There are many ways to find them in your area because different localities have different services. The United Way, for one, has a 211 referral number for voluntary organizations in your area with an information specialist. All you have to do is Google 211 Collaborative to find the resource in your area. Your area agency on aging has an elder care locator with a list of resources, and you can also speak to somebody one-on-one for case management. Cancer Care, the Patient Advocate Foundation, again, ACS, maintain extensive resource databases, and these organizations can also provide with other expenses, such as transportation, medical equipment, lodging, etc. In conclusion, it's important for patients and families to get a good grip on their finances, to review all their income and expenses, to complete a budget worksheet, to communicate with their health care team about costs, to understand health care insurance and covered costs, to save on medications, and to link up with advocacy and nonprofit organizations. So my parting words to all of you are to get informed, to speak up, get organized, and by all means, ask for help. We're here to help you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Jane. That was really very informative and a lot of really very substantive tips for everybody. So that I also want to mention to all of you that the call is live right now, but that in a couple of hours you actually can listen to it on either telephone replay or you can listen to it on our website. So that if some of you may want to listen again because there's so much information here that I want to remind you all, it's free. You can just do it. You can listen to it. It's 24 hours a day so that you can have that information really at your fingertips whenever you want to listen to it again. I know many of our participants take advantage of that feature, and it's really helpful to them. So I'm listening to all of the presentations. There's so much wonderful information that you kind of want to, you may want to hear some of it again. So just I want to give you a tip on that. Now, we do have time for questions, and we actually have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Stephanie to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions, and we'll take as many of your questions as possible. Now, if we don't get to your question, please call Cancer Care at 1-800-813-HOPE, and our staff are here waiting for your questions. So, Stephanie?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then 1 on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Our first question comes from Emil S. Your line is open.
Hi. Two questions. If we have health insurance and did not get any letter from our employer stating that we have health insurance, how do we prove coverage on the 2014 federal income tax form? Is our membership card enough? Also, when you said something about mammograms, does that include for men also? Because men are breast cancer patients.
Excellent. Deborah, can you address that question? Around the health insurance.
Yeah, I mean, with respect to the first question, I don't know what's going to be required for tax purposes. You probably should talk to your accountant about what's going to be required, but in terms of proof that you're enrolled in a health plan. With respect to your second question, it covers all preventive services, and that would include mammograms for women, and although I've never researched this question, I have to believe that would also include mammograms for men as well.
So, Emil, these are great questions. I would definitely, for the second question, do check with your healthcare team, but I would think it would cover it. It's screening, it's for men, and it's definitely would seem to be part of that. But that's a good question to ask your healthcare team as well. Excellent. We have a question from one of our online participants as well. And it really has to do with moving from state to state. If you live in another state, can you still see your medical team at a specialty center, out of your state for treatment, prevention, checkups with the ACA? Deborah or Alice, do you know the answer to that?
This is Alice. I think you need to check with your health insurer to see whether there's coverage. Multi-state coverage. That's the best way to find out.
Okay, excellent.
I will add one thing, though. Oh, I'm just adding one thing to that question. With people that are enrolled in clinical trials, the Act specifically refers to that and says that people can't be denied because they're receiving clinical trial treatment in another state.
And but that is a good question to ask your healthcare team, and indeed, often there are reasons that you seek care in other institutions, so sometimes that can be justified in that respect as well. A question from another one of our online participants, Marilyn. It's a question that may be of concern to everyone here. When I was newly diagnosed, the financial burden and medical jargon was too overwhelming. No matter the good wishes, when dealing with stage 4 cancer, it was too much. What do you recommend as one or two steps? That one could follow in terms of just trying to deal with all the information. Dr. Morrow, do you want to comment on that?
Can you just restate the question, Carolyn?
Sure. It was kind of a person who was newly diagnosed, and the financial burden and medical jargon was just too overwhelming.
Yes.
No matter the good wishes, when dealing with stage 4 cancer, it was just too much. What do you recommend as one or two steps, things to think about in terms of just wrapping one's hand around this diagnosis and dealing with this?
Yeah, I think, in that situation, we have to take things one step at a time and then focus on the most important and pressing things first, which is someone's immediate care and immediate needs. Of course, the context of insurance and cost of care and scope of the implications of care need to be done in parallel. But I think the first few steps would be to first identify a friend, a family member, someone who can be an assistant. It's very important to listen during appointments and to help navigate someone through the healthcare system, to identify advocates within the healthcare system, not just physicians and care providers, but social workers and other support networks, cancer care and other groups clearly can be of assistance indirectly and directly, and ask plenty of questions. No question is wrong or inappropriate ever.
Thank you. Excellent. And our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from Tony K. M. Your line is open.
Thank you. I have a question on your individual or family yearly out-of-pocket cost cap. I'm just wondering, does that include the combination of copays and deductibles?
Allison, Deborah, can you comment on that?
I think that you need to check with healthcare.gov to confirm whether those are included in the annual out-of-pocket. And if you go on the website or call the call center number, they'll give you information about that.
And do you want to give that call center number out again to everyone? And by the way, I'm going to send all the information that Alice gave you on the phone. We'll send it to you also after the program ends as well. But do you want to repeat that number again for everybody?
It's toll-free, 1-800-318-2596.
So that sounds like a nice go-to place for those type of questions, is what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay, excellent. Our next question?
Our next question comes from Lorianne M. Your line is open.
Hi. We're providers in California, and I do have one question that a lot of our patients are asking. We're one of the states that is considered EPO and HMO in the marketplace. So my one question would be, if we have a patient that is, say, Blue Cross HMO, will Blue Cross be handling that whole account, or will they be placed in medical groups?
Well, that's an excellent question. I know that is a specific question to your particular state, but I'm going to ask Deborah if you can just give some general guidelines to just addressing this and how to handle this.
Well, I'm really not sure. I'm wondering if Alice knows the response to that.
I don't know either, but my suggestion would be to contact the insurer to begin with. And then to, again, you have a state-based, state-run marketplace. If you know what the call center number is, fine. And if not, you can go on healthcare.gov and get the contact information, and they'll be able to tell you what the Blue Cross plans will include.
And do you want to say a little bit just in terms of the context? I realize that many of the questions that people are asking, which are excellent questions, but it's kind of the beginning of something, so you have to kind of find your way with it. So, Allison, Deborah, do you want to just comment on just, there'll be many questions that people are going to have, and I think the questions are, where do we go to get the answers to them? So are there some just general guidelines that you could just repeat for everybody in terms of where to go to get those answers, because I think people really want them?
Well, certainly, Alice has given out the numbers, the website and the call center number, but also, as I mentioned, each state will be formulating their own consumer assistance phone number, an organization to help people navigate. So it's important whether you contact your state insurance department or look online to find out the consumer assistance program number in your state, And they're also there to provide information about not only the what's available in the marketplace, but to help you navigate the system.
And I want to add that, you know, when I talked about the support that the Affordable Care Act recognized would be needed by both individuals and small businesses that were looking for information and the opportunity to enroll, whether it's a state-run marketplace or whether it's the federally run marketplace, they will all have both call centers and in-person assisters, navigators, and brokers, and certified application counselors, and they will all be available to be able to initially answer the questions that you've got and then take you through the enrollment process. I think that what is most important here is that everybody has that information. Everybody knows what resources to turn to be able to get their questions answered and then make a decision about whether they're ready to begin the enrollment process.
And there is a question here from Kim about how should we be advising people who are currently paying for COBRA now that they can get insurance through the marketplace? And again, that may, I'm going to ask again, you may have to answer that in a general way, but Alice and Deborah, do you want to comment on that as well?
I can start by commenting on that. If somebody has COBRA, they can go into the individual marketplace and see whether they can get a better price with better benefits than they're currently getting in COBRA. So the individual marketplace is open to someone who is on COBRA.
Right, and it really is an individualized assessment based on what the cost of COBRA is versus, you know, what is available in the marketplace and whether or not any subsidies might be available as well.
And I'm going to ask actually all of our speakers to just, I'm going to ask Dr. Palos to start actually, but to just as our concluding remark, if each of you would just maybe say a sentence or two to wrap everything up for everybody, because I realize that there are probably more questions. I will say to all of you that we'll be doing more of these programs, but I realize that what's very apparent is that there are many, many questions here, and so I want to be sure that we leave you with some sense of just some guidelines of how to deal with those emerging questions that are going to continue after our call ends. And, of course, I have advised you all to call our staff at Cancer Care, of course, use us as a resource. And also we've given out the number for healthcare.gov. But nevertheless, Dr. Palos, do you want to comment just briefly?
Certainly. Again, from just the questions and all the question marks that were raised during our conversation, it is apparent that we are still in a flux. So be patient. That is the most important thing to remember. Use as many different resources as you can, but I think the most important thing is to be patient and to just listen to what's going on as far as the changes. That's the only way. It's an evolving process. So it's a new thing, and with new things, there's going to be kinks, and as we iron out the kinks, then we'll get to the point that it will be, the answers will be easier to obtain. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. And Jane, do you want to comment as well?
Yes, to stay informed and to reach out for help, because this really is a sea change, and a lot of the language that there's a lot of language now that we're not used to, and that's why it's important to reach out to agencies like Cancer Care, your area agency on aging, to revisit the websites. You don't have sometimes reading these things all at once can be overwhelming. It's okay to take small pieces at a time. Look for information in your communities where you can find people who are the patient navigators and the certified application helpers, et cetera.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Morrow?
Yes, Carolyn, I would add that as an oncologist or a provider, I'd want to give people advice to say that let's not assume that the changes in the healthcare system are going to affect our ability to deliver excellent care, and to not assume that that's something that should be an impediment to seek the best care, to be your own advocate, to ask questions, and to look for help, as my colleagues have said, with regards to navigating through changes, and don't be shy to be your own advocate and ask for help, because as providers and patients collaborating together, we want to see only improvements and more efficient and excellent care continue to be delivered.
And I know, Dr. Moore, you're a physician who actually does welcome people asking you questions. Do you want to, other than my saying that, do you want to just comment on that? Because I think that often people are reluctant to ask their physician questions, and you could be that role model to everybody.
Now, the best time is to be open and honest up front, you know, because it obviously plays into the decision making, how someone's care is going to be managed in a bigger sense. And we can't make assumptions and we often scramble later on to try to figure out what some of these other implications might be once we've been through what might be a more limited discussion, so it's good to ask right away about how one's insurance, changes in the healthcare system, et cetera, one's own personal logistics about expectations might need to be considered immediately and upfront so we can work together to work it out.
Excellent. Thank you. And Alice, do you want to comment?
I want to say that the health plan marketplaces really do provide a new opportunity for all of us to access comprehensive, affordable health coverage. And at the very least, whether you decide to enroll or not, you need to have the information to know what's available to you, what the benefits are, what the costs are, what subsidies you may be eligible for, and what you'll get for your money. And it behooves us all to be able to access that information and then make a really informed decision.
Excellent. Thank you. And Deborah?
Sure. I certainly have to agree with all the speakers who've commented, you know, in terms of taking advantage of the resources that are out there and available. You know, as I said in my presentation, make sure that you read and understand your healthcare policy. And Alice did give out the information for healthcare.gov, but I also want to mention for those who right now are on Medicare, Medicare.gov has wonderful information about changes in Medicare as a result of the Affordable Care Act, and also your state Medicaid office to see if perhaps with the Medicaid expansion, this is a benefit that might be available to you, and just to stay informed.
Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been extraordinary, just an amazing group of speakers. I want to thank all of you who've asked questions, both online and on the telephone. We know that we've not been able to get to all of your questions, but we, although this is an hour workshop, please know that you have access to the staff of Cancer Care and all the resources that our speakers have provided for you. Most importantly, as we conclude our program today, I don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with cancer and trying to understand the Affordable Care Act in 2013, and we'll be doing more programs, of course, into the future. Please know that you're now part of our community of support, and you can call us at 1-800-813-HOPE, and our staff are here to help you. And you've been given a number of resources throughout the call. We will compile them and send them all to you so that you'll all have that information at your fingertips as well. I want to thank you all for participating today. I want to thank you for your energy and interest in this. And we will have more programs, as everyone has said, as everything becomes clearer, there'll be more details. And you'll be able to get information, of course, from your healthcare team and from all the different resources we've provided. Thank you all, and I want to wish you all a very fine day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect and have a wonderful day.